Hi, and welcome to the Just Riding Along Show.
Hello, and welcome to episode 218. Tonight's show is brought to you by drinking whiskey as fast as you can, which didn't actually happen by anyone here. It was just a joke made before we started recording, and that's how much thought we put into getting going on these shows, is I just pull a hijink right out of my ear and put it into your ear via internet tubes and podcast magic.
If we actually prepared for our shows, do you think they would be better or worse?
I don't know that it would have quite that same couple of folks just bantering about bicycles feel that it has today.
I think it would be worse. I really do.
Because it's never going to be good.
I mean, I feel like I can contribute more when I at least get to over, like, the new shit that and the listener questions. I mean, just kind of, like, pre-read them so it's not just, like, open a link and be like, all right, what do we have here?
Yeah, that's how I went about testing in college. I like to just show up and be like, oh, cool, this is a surprise. We'll do good on this.
Oh, this class is about math.
Yeah, I mean, math hasn't changed. I'll just do it right, and then we'll be good.
Good luck with that. All right, well, we want to start with shit we've been doing. Kenny, Matt, and I recorded, like, just a real quick thing on Sunday night.
Okay.
Like, at the time that I normally would be editing the show, I was like, hey, we should just kind of run through some stuff just so we can put something out there and we don't just, like, lose 5 patrons like what usually happens when we don't post anything. So we've talked a little bit about some of the new shit, but we didn't do a very long episode.
Excellent.
All right. This is normally where I would say what I've been doing, which is, let's see. I've worked on I just want to give you all a little peek into the bike shop world and what happens when it starts to snow. And what's happening now is I started on Monday, and we have never used product categories before, and we're going to now. And I began the task of putting 6,500 products into product categories. So,
what point of sale do you guys use?
Lightspeed.
And so why didn't you have categories before? It just kind of never happened, and then it just got worse and worse, and then really did never happen?
I don't look to the past. I just take the project in hand and move forward.
Because Matt wasn't working there when they opened.
No, that has nothing to do with it. That has nothing to do with it.
I mean, on one hand, like, it's easy to make fun of that. But on the other hand, truly, I mean, do you have to have categories? Honestly, no, you probably don't. Is it convenient and is the right thing to do? 100%. Like, all your reporting is, like, proper and you can, you know, slice and dice stuff the way you want. But, I mean, could you run a pretty effective bike business without doing categories? Yeah, I think you totally could.
And I think where it will come in to be the most beneficial is we really want to start the process of looking through inventory and seeing trends and things. And that's why this is important. So, you know, as a business grows, the needs grow and the needs have changed. And that's what we're working on now. And it doesn't take as long as you would think, I think, is the easiest way to put it. It's mind numbing, but it's not bad. And yeah, I am not done, but I'm much further along than I anticipated. I told one of my coworkers on Monday, I was like, I'll have this done this year. And I'm going to do that for sure. I think I'll have it done next week, which is really cool. But, you know, it just takes time. And it is tough to, sure, you can point fingers at the past, but that doesn't alleviate the issue. What does alleviate the issue is just assigning it to a person and that person just, you know, digging in and really, really getting after it. So I don't think this was my dad. I think it was someone else, but it sounds like something my dad would say, so I'm kind of lost. But if you're going to eat a shit sandwich, you better have a bunch of bread. So, you know, that's just the way that I'm tackling it is.
Maybe some barbecue sauce.
Lots of barbecue sauce and some cheese.
Oh, yeah. Gotta have the cheese.
Oh, my God. I just saw the picture on your computer, and I got so angry.
Why?
For all the wrong reasons. Figure out what's pissing me off in that photo.
That right there.
That right there.
Okay.
Jesus Christ. For anyone that doesn't know, because you're listening, Andrea is looking at a topic we're going to cover later, and the bar end plug is in upside down, and it really pisses me off because Ergon is a brand, and their brand is on their bar end, and their bar end goes in a certain way to look like their brand logo, and it takes 4 brain cells to do it right, and I guess they had 3, so.
I mean, there's bar plugs in there, so I guess that accounts for the 3 brain cells.
Yeah, it takes 1 more brain cell to look at it before you jam it in. I mean, you don't put your ESI bar plugs in where they say IZ. You put them in where they say ESI. It's just, it's not hard. So, yeah, so that's what I've been doing. I got a bike on the trainer, and it didn't work. So, I didn't ride the trainer yet.
Did you plug the trainer in the wall?
See, my Crave is set up single speed, and I was really hoping that because my cog and one of the cogs on the 12-speed cassette on the trainer are the same size, that it would be okay, but it's not. It makes a little funny noise, and like I just pedaled it for like a few minutes, like probably not even a full minute, honestly, just to see, and it just made some funny noises, and I was like, I need to get some more single-speed spacers and put a real single-speed cog on this, because much to Kenny's chagrin, I ride my trainer in erg mode, and I don't need to shift, so there's no reason to put gears on the bike just to ride it on the trainer. I just need to single-speed the trainer, and I've been busy, so I also this week, Andrea found out that, was it this week you found that out? No, we talked about it already, that Falcon Wild Peaks do not work in the snow. Not at all.
And Matt got to experience that today.
Didn't doubt that they didn't work in the snow. I just didn't believe how bad they were going to be because Andrea's snow tires showed up at the bike shop this week. And, oh, that's a really funny story. I go out to the FedEx guy's truck and I'm like, shit, you got a bunch of tires. I was like, or no, I looked in the truck and I was like, some of those tires are mine. And he's like, cool, I got 7 packages for you. And he's like, here's 3 or here's 2. And I like stuck those inside and I walk back out. He's like, I can't. He's like, here's the 3rd one. I don't know where the other 4 are. I was like, I wasn't joking around. 4 of those car tires are being delivered here. And he's like, ah, fuck. I thought you were pulling my leg. And yeah, I just had them delivered to the shop because it didn't make any sense to have FedEx drive them to Howard and then me drive them back to Salida to get them mounted. So had them delivered to the shop. And
plus, right now, our FedEx guy, like,
would have a tough time getting on
the
non-plowed.
Yeah, like, I watched him.
Roads.
Like, I actually pulled up to our driveway as he was delivering something else that wasn't tires, and he like had a box and got out of the truck and ran up the driveway and then ran back out of the driveway without a box and had just like put them behind a tree close to the end of the driveway. So it's snowy, and if you don't have 4-wheel drive, which I'm guessing his truck didn't, or he just didn't want to drive it up our driveway, which I totally understand because in our neighborhood, some people don't really do much to plow their driveway. You could definitely, if you're a delivery driver, you could get stuck in someone's driveway and that would just fuck up your whole day. I am not faulting the FedEx guy for that. I'm just saying that this time of year, you got to be mindful with the kind of shit that you're having delivered to your house.
So let's see, what else was I going to say? So I left for work this morning kind of early, took Andrea's truck. The Wild Peaks drive like absolute dog ass in the snow. And I just want to cover something that came up in Slack. Like, people were dogging on me for saying that you use 4-wheel drive, and or people trying to say like, yeah, duh, you have to use 4-wheel drive in snow. Like, no, you don't. You know what you have to do in snow? You have to have good tires. And if it works like dog ass in 2-wheel drive, you know what it's going to do in 4-wheel drive? It's going to work like half dog ass.
Yeah, I mean, the issue is, I mean, clearly there are situations where you need to use 4-wheel drive or all-wheel
sure.
drive or whatever the hell your vehicle
and
has.
And 4-wheel drive doesn't do dick when you're braking.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Everyone has 4-wheel brakes.
However many wheels are driven in your vehicle, whether it's 2 or 4, or in Utah, if you have an F-150, it might have 6 wheels, then it doesn't matter yet, because right when you brake, you're in the same boat as everybody else.
And yeah, so I got those installed this morning.
By the way, are those, were they Wild Peak 3 or 4?
4s.
4s? Okay. Just curious. I know the Wild Peaks are popular tire.
Well, they shouldn't be.
And a bunch of my friends have them, and I think it's kind of mixed
well,
between the 3s and 4s.
Like, in dry and in like a little bit of mud, they were I'd say even better, maybe, than KO2s. But yeah, like in the snow, they just fall on their face.
It is really funny how different those tires can be. On my Ridgy, I had some like full-on passenger car tires on it when I bought the vehicle from that person. And it worked shockingly well in the snow. And I put on some like proper light truck tires with some tread and everything. And it's a million times better off-road, but it's worse in the snow. But yeah. It's just crazy how that works.
Yeah. And then let's see. I dropped the truck off and then I didn't have a car. So I walked back to the bike shop, took an e-bike and went to drop Andrea's glasses off to get repaired because baby's first glasses and she already scratched the fuck out of them. So.
Yep. Well, I mean, that's why I like got nicer than, I guess you'd say, like the base model glasses, because I knew that I was going to fuck them up. I told the person who was selling me glasses, I was like, I am going to scratch my glasses. Like, I am hard on things, and I'm not going to wear these all the time, so I'm going to end up taking them off and, like, throwing them somewhere, and they're going to get scratched. And she's like, well, let's look at these, because they have a lifetime warranty, and they're very scratch-resistant, and if you do scratch them, then you can get them repaired or replaced. It's like, yeah, that's what I need. I'll pay the extra however much it is to get some that I don't have to just fully replace out of pocket when I fuck them up. I didn't say fuck them up because she looked like a lady that didn't say fuck a lot. But, you know, I made it clear that I was going to ruin them, and I did. I put a big scratch right in front of one of the eyeballs.
Yep.
And this is the first time you've had glasses, Andrea?
Yep. And I mean, I use them for like anything up close. Like when I had them out in my shed where I was like skinning animals and using sharp things, and they're very helpful for that. So I don't poke myself or put a hole in something that doesn't need a hole. And then I fucked them up.
But I did that. And then I went to the grocery store and then I went and worked all day. And Troy came by and gave a clinic on some charger damper upgrade thing. I don't know. I wasn't there.
I thought you say like you weren't paying attention.
No, like I was working. We have two buildings, and I was in charge of the other building today. So
Troy came by. He said some shit. I didn't care.
Nah. I mean, also, it's like deep suspension dive shit and like service rider. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to be like, yeah, we can do that. This is how much it costs, and this is how much the parts cost, and it'll take this much time, and then I hand it to someone else, and they do it. That's clean hands. What's that thing? Dirty hands, clean money, the stupid blue-collar thing. Clean hands and knowing the right guy for the job. That's me. And then let's see. Did anything else cool? Oh, and I almost lost the Frontier this week. Almost smoked a deer with it. It was the closest I've been to hitting a deer without a deer dying ever, so.
Flashbacks to the 4Runner hitting a deer at 70 miles an hour.
73. But anyways.
I mean, at least with the Nissan, there's only like two airbags that would come out and not.
Yeah, but that
17.
Cab is really small. It would have been so loud. Yeah. So that didn't happen, thankfully. And that's all I have to talk about. So someone else just start talking so I don't just keep rambling about things.
Speaking of a deer, I guess I'll go. I almost smoked a deer in Draper, which is like a German town.
They have like town deer, like some that are kind
of
like...
Oh yeah, we got Draper deer, and they are special needs for sure. They're not good wild animals. Yeah, and they wander around. You see them from time to time, but I almost smoked one. Yep, that's my deer story.
Yeah, that happens in Salida. There's town deer in Salida, and it's kind of funny. Like back during COVID lockdowns, apparently like a mountain lion or two actually came into Salida proper and ate a deer like on the bike path. And I just imagine like the town deer in Salida, like people stop for them when they cross the road and they feed them, which they shouldn't do. It's illegal, but they do it anyway. And yeah, like they are just kind of like giant rats that roam around the city. And so I can only imagine when one saw a mountain lion, they're like, that weird looking dog is eating me. No, why are you biting me? Yeah.
Well, I guess I'll continue. What have I been doing? I did a moto trip. It was pretty cold and we had a snow and then it rained some and it was just kind of cold and miserable. So last weekend, I drove a little bit south to a place called Woodside and rode some moto down there. It's near, if you're curious, you can go look at it at a map. It's near Highway 6 and Highway 70. So like if you're going to Moab from Salt Lake, it's kind of on the way there. It's like 2, 2.5 hours away. And just did a little moto trip bit out there. I've been out there a handful of times. And yeah, it's kind of fun. Rode some new stuff. I did some hill climbs that I hadn't attempted before. It's kind of cool. This place, when you first pull in and like the parking lot, if you will, there's usually very few people there because it's in the middle of nowhere. But it's just got this huge mesa plateau looking thing. And you can just hill climb up it in 70 different lines. It's pretty cool. So there's all kinds of stuff. There's like full on hard enduro lines. There's like more tame ones and all that. So kind of worked my way up and did some, what I thought was a fairly rowdy one. It was like,
what bike were you riding?
I was on the Husky.
Dude, are you just abandoning the electric stuff?
For the most part, yeah.
You going to get you a two stroke for some real off-roading?
I don't know. I'm pretty happy with the Husky. I don't know. We'll see. There's a possibility. I still really like the electric bike, but for doing this longer stuff and doing exploring, it's more fun to ride the gas bike. You just have way more range, clearly. Also, the more I ride it, the suspension is just so much better. It's not even funny. And the suspension on the Ultra is quite good. It's definitely leagues ahead of, you know, the little light bees and stuff that are out there. Once you ride real.
Is it stock or did you upgrade it?
The Ultra is stock with the exception of power and wheels, basically. So it's got like proper sized 1821 moto wheels. So you can get like proper moto tires and it has more power. That's it. Other than that, it's pretty much stock. Yeah. So I did some pretty big hill climbs. They were like to make it. And I do have an ECU now, so I make some more power. So it's probably making, I don't know, it's probably making 35 to 40 at the tire, something like that, I'm guessing. So it makes maybe 5 more horsepower, 10 more horsepower than it did stock. And these were like third gear, wide open at the base, like just get enough space. And like, you know, the little things you hit at the base as you G out for like the start of the hill climb. It was actually a little scary because you're hitting it at probably, I don't know, I mean, almost top of third. And my bike is geared out a little bit. So it's probably, I don't know, you're probably going 40 is my educated guess. And it's just wide open in third and you know, almost wanting to come off the bike as you hit the stuff in the beginning because you're just going so fast and you're just trying to keep it pointed straight. And then you have to actually like partway up, I had to downshift to second. And yeah, pretty fun. So I did a few of those. But, you know, I'm by myself, so, like, I don't want to go too rowdy or, like, it's right next to the car. So if I completely nunchucked my bike, which is possible, like, if you fuck up, like, you don't make it, your bike's going to nunchuck down the mountain. It'll be bad. So I was close enough where I could, like, you know, limp the carcass of my dirt bike into the bed of the truck probably if I had to. But anyway, I'm only going to get so crazy.
Like, I don't know, like dump it near the trailhead and cover it with some sticks so no one took it.
Yeah, I'm in a desert, so there's not much hiding
cactus.
It. Maybe. So anyway, I rode out there. I did some exploring. It was fun. What else did I do? Anything else cool? I don't think so. It's been unusually warm this week here, so I'll probably hang out and do a local moto ride here this weekend. A buddy of mine just got a new dirt bike. And so, yeah, he got a new Husky 300 two-stroke. He had like an old KTM 300 two-stroke that he had for a couple seasons. And yeah, so it'll be fun. Go out and I think ride with him. That's all I got.
All right. Well, I've been doing pretty much all the same stuff. If you remember from our short episode that Matt and I put out, I had put some beaver traps out in an iced over pond where I had to like chip through ice. Yeah, Kenny, you haven't heard this part. Like, so I went beaver trapping and I've never really dealt with ice that you can walk on or possibly walk on or possibly fall through.
Okay.
And Matt made an ice breaker for me. An ice spud, as it's called in, like, I don't know, ice fishing terms. And I was able to, like, cut out small chunks of ice and just look at the depth of it and be like, yeah, I can walk on that.
You know what I've always wanted to do? It seems like a very Canadian thing. I've always wanted to get in a situation where you have to cut a hole in ice with a chainsaw.
I wasn't quite at that. Like, it was definitely, like, I think at the deepest, like the deepest hole that I had to cut to put a trap in was the ice was probably like 5 or 6 inches deep. Like it was actually pretty thick, but the chipper you made was really good. So I was able to kind of like cut a shape and then kick it a few times and like break it out and then scoop the ice out and put my trap in. And I caught, over the course of 3 nights, caught 4 beavers. So that was great. And I know I cooked some more beaver meat, and it's like surprisingly just really good. I mean, if people who like to eat wild game knew how good it was, I think beavers would be fucked.
One of those recent survival shows that I've been watching, that was probably last year. I don't remember which one it was. I could probably figure it out. But, you know, they usual MO, they drop you off. It seems like a pretty legit one, but they like, you know, drop you off somewhere in Canada or something. And yeah, you just got to survive. And this particular place, like it was beavers that they were, that's like ultimately what they were trying to get. Cause they knew if they got one, you know, you made jerky and this and that, like you could totally, one beaver could get you going for like a month.
Yeah. Cause they get big. I caught one that was 49 pounds, which is like a 50 pound beaver is a pretty fucking large animal. And 49, like, I don't know, something about a 49-pound beaver, like, they're heavier than a 50-pound bag of chicken food. I don't know why. There's some weird physics going on there, but they're way harder to carry. It's like trying to carry a bag of non-Newtonian fluid, as Matt has put it in the past. But, yeah, and they're amazing. Like, you just throw a beaver leg in a crock pot with some spices, and 10 hours later, it's just like this amazing shredded, like it's kind of like beef, but not quite as fatty, but it's just, it's wonderful. It's delicious. Like it's really good. So yeah, like I'm really happy, and we have so much of it that I'm kind of starting now, like to just find people that I can give some to that just need some food. Like I texted the guy that I work for in Leadville, at Leadvello. I haven't heard back from him yet, but you know, I was like, hey, do you or anyone there, like, do you guys need some meat? Because I've got plenty. I mean, if no one takes me up on it, we'll eat it. But like, I've got, I don't want to say an unlimited supply, because at some point either the season will end or I'll be like, yeah, I've just taken enough out of this area. But it's literally like the place where I'm trapping, there are so fucking many of them that I don't think that, you know, at the rate that I'm going, like I'm not going to negatively impact the ecosystem there. Like in no world would I just go out to like a single beaver pond and just annihilate a family of beavers, because that would just be ecologically irresponsible. But in this area, like they're just like stacked on top of each other, and half of the ones that I'm catching have like scars and stuff where they've been fighting with other beavers. Yeah, they're really territorial, especially in the springtime. So yeah, like I'm just gonna catch as many as I can out there, and if I can feed some people while also like having some nice fur to both sell and make into stuff for myself and whatnot, like I'm really stoked about that. But that's pretty much what I've been doing. But yeah, we're the forecast looks like it's going to be just warm and dry for the foreseeable future, which is part of the reason why I'm not going to go back out to that spot for a little while, because the ice is going to get to where it's going to be sketchy to walk on, I think. So it'll be a minute, but I'll get back out there. We want to do new shit?
Yep.
I'll go first with something that I think is really interesting. So Ducati motorcycles are making e-bikes. And
you would think that these brands would fucking learn.
Well,
you would really think they would learn.
So these are not like your, like, so we talked, Kenny, last time you were, you know, that we recorded with you, we talked about like the Rivian e-bike and kind of went on like a rant of how terrible most of the like moto brand e-bikes are. This looks fucking legit.
Check out this fucking thing.
Yeah, like these, like they're getting input from like professional veteran cyclists on how to make their e-bikes. And this article covers mostly the road ones, but the mountain ones look really good too. And I don't know, I mean, most marketing photos you see of these companies, you know, that aren't bike companies that are making e-bikes, like they're really cheesy and you can tell that like
they put the bar end plugs upside down and
they just you can tell like the person riding the bike probably doesn't really know how to ride a bicycle and whatnot. Like this looks absolutely legitimate. They look like really nice bikes. And they don't really talk much here about like the drive system or anything, but it looks like they're doing it right.
Yeah, my question would be, you know, distribution. Clearly they can use motorcycle dealers, right? But the problem is motorcycle dealers don't know bicycles. They don't.
Yeah.
We see that all the time here. Yeah, a lot of people here have made the mistake of buying some, you know, moto adjacent brand e-bike. It's not like totally garbage. It's not full China garbage or anything, but they're just not fully put together well, and they're not set up correctly when they're built. They get zero support from them. I don't know. I'll see it. I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. The distribution and sales might be a hang up, but the bikes themselves look totally legitimate. But it says that they will be unveiled starting in March of 2026.
There's pictures right here. They're unveiled right now. I don't think they know what unveiled means.
True. But, I mean, at least the marketing pictures look like they have actual cyclists riding their bike, which is way more than what we can say for literally every other non-bike brand that has released an e-bike.
Are you sure you want to take that up-close sex photo with the hood not popped back in place properly? All right, we can move on. It's got Ohlins on it. I don't care.
Yeah, the mountain bike has an Ohlins fork.
And coil.
And coil shock.
If it's not making 169 Newton meters of torque, I'm not in.
I don't know. One of those pictures looks like it is a pretty fucking stout bike.
Okay.
Kenny, did you see the first 32-inch trail bike that you can purchase?
I did. I can't remember where I saw it. Oh, yeah, there we go.
What I love about this is it's a trail bike, longer travel. This is 120 to 140 and mullet option.
Mega mullet option.
Yeah, mega mullet. So 32 front, 29 rear. And it's got Aspens on it. And I understand that's like the only production tire available in 32 that's decent, but it is on a trail bike. And it is Aspens.
Aspens work really well on full suspension bikes. They don't work well on hardtails. And there's going to be physically more rubber on the ground. I'm not.
Yeah, but we had that same discussion when Trek, like when 29ers first came out, Trek's like, oh, you only need like a 2-inch wide 29er tire.
Well, this isn't 2-inch wide. It's 2.4.
I know.
And there is another tire. I can't remember where I saw it, but there is another Maxxis tire coming. I think it's going to be a dissector or a forecaster. I can't remember.
Well, that was in the thing that we talked about, the new dissector, not the dissector 2, just a revamped dissector. And they did tease in that article that it might happen in 32.
This is the second bike I've seen with a rear shock that they forgot to put a spring on.
I think you're just looking at the same shock again, Kenny.
We saw this a couple of weeks ago. The other thing that's interesting is I never thought I would say that it would be possible, but in this situation, you could run your stem into your own head tube if you crash.
Yeah, I don't know what they're going to do. There needs to, yeah. I do.
It's a problem that I never thought would be a problem.
I have a lot of opinions.
And this is also the bike Matt was groaning about when we first started, where the Ergon bar plug is definitely upside down. Just so everyone knows out there, the Ergon logo, which is kind of like a half moon or maybe 2/3 to 3/4 moon shape with a dot. The dot is supposed to be representative of the handlebar, and the thick kind of crescent shape over the top represents a grip or a hand or something on top of the handlebar. So when you put the bar plug in, you're supposed to put that dot towards the bottom as if you're orienting it like a handlebar with a hand or a grip on top of it.
Oh, I always thought it was like a DEI yin yang.
No. The way that I always remember it is every time I put a bar plug in, I say to myself internally, or sometimes outside my brain, into the real world, ergon time is 5 o'clock, because the little dot goes down at 5.
There you go. So that's something that you can't unsee now. And hopefully anyone who's listening who installs grips on bikes remembers that when they put the bar plugs into ergon grips. Because, I mean, hopefully, like Matt said, if you install some ESI grips, hopefully you're installing the bar plug so that the ESI logo isn't upside down or sideways. I don't know.
Some
people don't have that level of attention to detail.
If you read the ESI instructions, you install the bar and plugs first, and then you put the grip on, and the grip should cover the bar end plug.
Another interesting thing about this bike, 24-hole wheels appear to be aluminum, front and rear, 32-inch, 24-hole.
That's fine.
Seems aggressive.
A little bit.
That's so when a squirrel crosses the trail in front of you, it doesn't get caught in your spokes.
It will be completely safe.
An armadillo could run through there.
Yep.
Can you imagine, like, any woodland creature getting caught in there, and then, like, you have the inverted fork that's on this bike, and it just kind of, like, I don't know, gets just wailed up into your stanchions, and the bike shop's like, what happened to your stanchions? And it's like, well, a squirrel got caught in there, and now it's got squirrel juice on it.
Do just little subtle things, I will say. I do like that the aesthetic of the stem kind of matches the frame angles and all that. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, it does. And they did put some thought into that. Like, if you read the article, they made a proprietary stem that actually makes sense. It's not proprietary, like, oh, we just wanted to make something that's weird. It's made so that your stack and reach matches their 29ers. Like, if you have this bike in 29, if you buy it in 32, or mullet, 32 front, 29 rear, like, your stack and reach is going to match that of a 29 front wheel.
Wait a minute. Is this entire bike made out of one billet of aluminum?
I believe so.
How? What do they do to the insides? Or is it glued? Are the two halves glued together like a Shimano crank?
Don't know.
I don't know.
Hmm. I'm
They say
curious.
That it's around 24 hours of machining time alone that goes into each frame.
Yeah, that's pretty insane. I can only assume that it's glued together.
Or welded.
I guess, yeah, it could be welded together.
It kind of looks like if you look at the pictures of the bikes all hanging, like the frames that are hanging on hooks on a wall, it looks like there is a seam down the top tube where it was welded. Which isn't necessarily a bad thing. I mean, as long as they do it properly. I don't know the physics of welding aluminum parts together like that, but I know that you can fuck it up and the weld won't stay together. But I mean, I would hope that if they're spending 24 hours on one frame, that part of that is proper temperatures and welding processes and whatnot.
By the way, do they have any prices or anything on here?
I believe it says it's going to be a while until they have like pricing available.
Because that's going to be at least a $5,000 frame. There's no other way around that.
Yeah, probably. I mean, I wouldn't doubt that. And if it's, you know, if it takes that long to manufacture, then sure. I mean, they gotta make some money off of it, right? Like, they can't just sell them for, you know, what you would pay for a normal molded aluminum or carbon bike, you know, where they can make a whole size run in a day. I'm scrolling through trying to see if they have. Oh, here we go.
You can definitely see that it's two pieces there.
Yeah, so you can order it now, and it is 6,990 euros for the frame only.
Whoa, I was off by $2,000.
Yeah.
That's what I figured. Jeez, that's insane.
That's a lot, you know, but it's, you know, that's what happens with any first run of a type of bike. Like, I'm sure this is good. I'm sure they, you know, did a lot of testing, and this bike is going to be perfectly good, but it's going to be unaffordable for most people.
Like, I'm not mad about it, but, like, why?
Yeah.
Like, why do this type of manufacturing? It just seems weird. Like, we're pretty good at hydroforming tubes, and it costs 1/10 of that. I just don't understand why you would do it.
Yeah, I don't know. But that's what they did. And I'm sure at some point, it's going to be like anything else that's weird. You know, like, we've talked about it in the past that, you know, a lot of times with a lot of weird bikes that have become mainstream down the road, you know, someone like Surly we'll build a cheap steel boat anchor of a frame in this weird bike, and enough people like it that other manufacturers that can mass produce it out of nicer material and make it lighter, faster, whatever, then they start doing it, and it costs the same as a Surly, but it's a lot nicer. So, yeah, I mean, I'm sure in the future, it seems like 32 is going to be a thing, and eventually you'll be able to get a 32-inch or a Mega Mullet trail bike, and it won't cost $7,000 for the frame. And it will be hydroformed and all that good stuff.
I wonder when we're actually going to attach the handlebars to your fork crown instead of your steer tube.
Well, I think that's the problem with this bike, is I think that it has too much travel. Because if you remember, if you hop in your Wayback Machine, when we went to 29, we went to shorter travel. And yes, we've grown that again. But I think that an XC fork in the 32 world is going to be a 75 to 80 mil travel. And I'm borrowing that from Yang or whoever the guy from that bike brand that's making the 32-inch steel hardtail right now. Listen to a podcast with it. I can't remember his name or his company. But I think we're going to see shorter travel so we can avoid this nonsense. Because
I think legitimately we can actually start like on a 140 32, we can attach the handlebar to the crown of the fork. It'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean, you still have the stack, which I know we've talked a lot about, like, how high should your handlebars be in relation to your seat? And as long as they're making 32-inch bikes, and I think it'll be just like 29. Like, at first, they're going to be large, extra large, maybe some mediums that have some kind of compromise to account for the added stack height. You know, it's just gonna be a while before, you know, everyone of all sizes is gonna be comfortable on a bigger wheeled bike without without some kind of weird stem like what they have on this one.
The cool thing is, the answer is, how high should your bars be? Way higher than your seat.
See, I don't think that's always true. I mean, especially when you're talking about cross country, also, I think, you know, people are going to be looking for the lower stack height.
There's like 6 people in the U.S. who legitimately can ride handlebars below their seat. And maybe Matt's one of them. I don't know.
I mean, I definitely am. I just can't. There's just no weight on the front wheel. And
it's definitely, it's a compromise. Like, when you're climbing and your bars are a lot higher than your seat, especially just for smaller people where, I don't know, like, you just don't have as much body to put weight on the front wheel. Like, when you're climbing, having your bars higher, it makes the front wheel float. And I've experienced that. And I talked about it, you know, when Matt and I did our e-bike ride out to, you know, like up a gnarly 4x4 road, like on the way up, it was annoying because the front wheel wanted to just kind of wander if I wasn't just actively, I had like my bars up higher because I hadn't had surgery on my hand yet. And I wanted the bars up really high, and the result was it was kind of sketchy and difficult to climb, but then on the way down, it was great. It handled better than what I was used to, but climbing was definitely a chore with that.
Matt, do you have your moto bars lower than your seat?
Is my moto seat as high as my bike seat? No. I mean, fuck, dude. Like, it's a totally different thing. So,
and a moto in general has a bigger front tire. It has a lot more weight on the front.
It has a longer wheelbase.
Yeah, like, you don't have to worry about that as much.
I mean, you still have to weight the front wheel on the moto. Like, there's times on the trials bike. Last time I rode the trials bike, I was messing up this one thing, and we were just out goofing around, so I could do it a bunch of times, and it was a move of weight on the front wheel, weight on the front wheel, weight on the front wheel, you're done turning, weight on the rear wheel, all the gas. And it took a lot of mental gymnastics to get that sorted because I hadn't been riding. And I think that there's different styles of riding, and one of my coworkers, who is exponentially faster than me, he is a low bar boy. He's into it, and he got a Bronson this year, and he rode it a few times, and he's like, I just can't fucking turn this thing. And he went, like, he slammed his bars with the stock bar, and he's like, it's getting better. And he put a flat bar on, and he's like, It looks stupid, but it actually turns now.
I personally think that not all people, but most people could probably benefit from higher bars. I think there's a reason why, if you look at the average mountain bike that comes out these days, like they're getting higher and higher and higher in the front end. I think there's a reason to that. That's all.
Well, I think too, like people don't care. People are realizing that uphill speed isn't the end all be all. Like people are more just enjoying their bike. Like they're just getting up the hill and then enjoying the downhill more and not worrying as much about uphill. But if you're talking about cross country racing, you spend more time and therefore like it's more important in the course of a bike race to be able to go uphill as quickly, efficiently, and accurately as possible. And having really high bars does not jive with that.
I'm going to argue that descending is more important than it's ever been in cross country.
Well, yeah, I mean, you have to be able to descend, but you
never do it as long.
Yeah, it's just not, if you look at the amount of time spent descending in a bike race versus the amount of time climbing, you're just climbing more. It's just like when I was, you know, the miniature version of that, the non-professional cross-country racer version of that is like when I was racing the winter park cross-country races. I didn't use a dropper post. And it was because they're big climbs. Like they're, you know, 1,000 to 1,500 foot climbs a couple of times during every race. And that's where most of your racing time was spent. So it didn't make sense to carry the extra weight of a dropper post when I could descend without it. I could easily.
And the winter part doesn't compare to modern, you know, World Cup for sure.
Yeah, but it doesn't.
The thing that also is more true than ever is we're running dropper post all the time. And you know what happens when you drop your post? Your bars are higher than your seat.
They are.
I mean, they really are, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's a trade-off. And I think for trail bikes, it's not going to matter as much. Just like Kenny said, you know, for the everyday person, it doesn't matter. And they are probably happier with their bars higher. But if you're talking about 32-inch bikes for cross-country racing, that's going to be one of the big hang-ups.
Can't wait to see all the weird fucking stems and stuff. Yeah, like I think it's going to be some, cool.
There's going to be some crazy shit out there. And I'm excited to see it. But yeah, that's going to be a thing. I think that's going to be one of the things that keeps, you know, some cross-country racers, especially smaller ones, from going to 32-inch.
But I cannot wait to see the crown-mounted stem. It's going to happen. I'm telling you guys, it's going to happen.
I mean, I'm not saying you're wrong. However, going back, I think one of the reasons this bike needs such an aggressive stem is they're cramming more travel than maybe necessary under the bottom of the head tube.
By the way, it actually makes so much sense when you think about it. A crown, you could do a crown mounted direct stem. Like it's just direct bolt on DH style. Be freaking awesome.
Wait a minute. We're going to take this a step further. You keep saying handlebar. That's not necessary anymore.
Handle stem?
No.
Oh, what if your fucking handlebars come off of your stanchions?
No.
Like clip-on style, like a road race motorcycle.
Well, that's what I was going to say is, yes. Like, that's what I was about to say is, what if you have a right and a left bar
that
individually mount to the top of a crown?
Yeah, I think that's great. Yeah, what do you fucking need a middle part of a bar for? What a waste. You don't fucking do anything. How often are you in the middle part of your handlebar? Like, we are...
That's it. That's the next episode on the podcast, players and stuff. What a waste. Because, yeah, I mean, the thing is then we don't need... Like, you could literally run a...
Just cut that fork
you would just
tube off
yeah
at the,
you would just tighten
the top of the head tube
yeah your headset top cap would touch your
yeah it touches your, the upper yeah it's like the upper
the,
bearing
the,
it's literally
the headset
right there
top cap and then your bars come off at like the top of the crown and they're individually mounted because you can adjust your reach with the just like a motorcycle you'll have you know, or, you know, on a motorcycle, you can reverse the clamps generally to change your reach a little bit. This is probably going to have multiple mounting points and you'll only, you know, this might cover 30, 40, 50, and then the next one up does, you know, 40, 50, 60, or whatever. And then you just have two individual parts, and then we need bar end plugs on the outside and the inside of our handlebars. Oh, I guess that's the real question. Would we go back to a 22.2 bar then? Because you don't need, because the bar physically gets shorter.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we would.
The handlebar is then, you know, I'm holding my hands up, I'm doing some math. You know, you're going to have a roughly like 250, 300 millimeter segment of bar on either side. Do we need that to have a taper? Do we need that to be, you know, like, yeah, there's, I'm going to go fire up the drill press as soon as we finish editing, and I'm going to just start drilling into my Zeb.
There we go. I love it. It's going to be amazing.
Do you think I can accomplish this with a file, a drill press from Harbor Freight, and a lot of cocaine?
We have a lathe, too.
Oh, yeah, and a lathe.
A little tiny one. But
I mean, you can do it with no bolts. Just weld that bitch right on there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, as long as you're CNCing stuff.
I can't weld magnesium to aluminum.
The crown's not magnesium. I think the crown's aluminum. The lowers are magnesium.
I can't weld aluminum at all, though.
Well, you should be able to.
Harbor Freight will be closed by the time I get there. Shit. This is going to have to wait till tomorrow. Crap. I can get the cocaine tonight.
I'm just from kidding. Where?
I don't know. I don't know where to get cocaine. I've never even seen it in person. Yeah. It's whatever. Now that we've made bad jokes about me doing cocaine, which isn't going to happen.
Cocaine's really tame. Like, compared to all the other shit people do, it's super chill. For real.
Well, you want to know what had no chill? AliExpress and Chinese law enforcement snagging up all those counterfeit S-Works.
Yep. Pretty wild.
Operation seized over $1.5 million worth of counterfeit goods.
So
that was like, yeah, I was going to say a couple frames.
They said $1.5 million worth of fake products, including specialized Roval frames, handlebars and wheels, and fake Pinarello, Cannondale, Cervelo, and Trek products.
Interesting stuff.
Yep. Trek recalls some Domane and Checkpoint e-bikes for under-torqued chainring bolts. So you have to take them to the bike shop and get them properly torqued, or they can come loose.
The Trek will give you a $20 in-store credit towards a Trek Electra or Bontrager purchase through December 31st of 2026. So if you have...
No, the credit is valid through then. They have to handle the recall indefinitely.
Okay, well, yeah. So these were Domani Plus ALR5, Domani Plus ALR6 AXS, Checkpoint Plus SL6, and Checkpoint Plus SL7s. They've had three incidents of the chainring loosening without injury, and these were sold in store and online from July 2025 through September 2025. So if you have one of those, take it by your Trek retailer and get your $20 credit and get your chainring bolts tightened properly, which hopefully... they tell people how to do that, because I've seen plenty of bike mechanics who don't do that properly.
It's fine. No one's going to do it wrong.
Spoiler alert, it requires a fucking torque wrench.
No, it doesn't.
I am calibrated to within in 1 Nm. I can go 0 to 20 in 1 Nm increments, 100%.
All right. And
it's
get
been,
them all
It's been
the
verified.
Same, get them all the same torque. I mean, I always...
I once had someone propose to me that in the shop there should be a competition of who can get the closest to a torque, and I was like, I'll win. And they're like, yeah. I'm like, yeah, I'll use a fucking torque wrench.
Because even if your torque wrench is a little off, which I'm sure a lot of times in bike shops, like, no one's taking their torque wrenches to get calibrated, you're going to be pretty fucking close. And if they're all, I don't know, 1 or 2 Nm off, but they're all torqued the same, I don't know, maybe you put a drop of blue Loctite on each one of them, you're going to be fucking fine.
2 Nm off, though.
The torque's not right, but it's the same.
I mean, that's better than someone just fucking winging it.
I wonder if there's a bike shop out there that gets their torque wrenches calibrated. It's a serious
maybe.
Question.
Yeah. Sure.
One out of 10,000.
Yeah, like, so, I've never heard of anyone doing that, but I mean, I think it's still just good practice to be at least consistently wrong.
There's something I've always wanted to do that I have not done. I've always wanted to pick an arbitrary torque, like let's just say 5 Newton meters. And then I want to set up a tool in the vise, like clamp the, let's say a 5 millimeter wrench or, a hex key on your torque wrench, clamp the 5 flats, and then figure out the distance from the pivot to the handle where you should be grabbing. And then with a nice scale, weigh the correct amount of weight and see, like you could check the calibration with weights.
You can, but nobody knows what a Newton. Nobody knows what a Newton is. You can't produce a Newton. It's not possible.
You also would have to have calibrated weights in that.
And that is
situation, and you can buy those.
That is trackable, or that is achievable. But also, there is, I think, a way that you could get your weight really close, and the solution is, you would get really close on your weight. And also, Kenny, you would just convert Newton meters to foot pounds to work it out. Don't be daft.
No, what the fuck's a, like, seriously, what the fuck's a Newton? Is it like 3/4 of a beaver tail? What the hell is a goddamn Newton? I mean, I'm all about the metric system. It's amazing. But like just now thinking about it, I don't know why I've never actually thought it through. What the fuck is a Newton?
Matt's looking it up right now.
Like, what's 1 Newton? Is that like 1 box of Oreos?
A Newton, let's see. A Newton meter is equal to the torque resulting from the force of 1 Newton, which we'll get there in 1 second, applied perpendicularly.
If you're going to tell me that 1 Newton meter is 1 Newton applied 1 meter away, I'm going to punch you in the face.
It is applied to the end of a moment arm that is 1 meter long.
You don't have to tell me. Fucking moment arm. What the fuck is a goddamn Newton?
It is the unit of force in the international systems of units expressed in terms of SI based units. It is 1 kilogram meters per second squared, the force that accelerates a mass of 1 kilogram at 1 meter per second squared.
Why is there acceleration involved in my torque wrench?
Dude.
Because anytime you have movement, that's in physics, that's acceleration.
But like, am I not wrong? Like, this is a serious question. You're allowed to tell me that I'm dumber than shit. I'm not like clickety clacking on the computer about any of this. I'm just thinking about it. What, like a Newton? Newton is not a measurement of weight, correct? Like, I don't understand. Well, I guess foot, as far as
no,
torque
a
goes.
Newton is a unit of force, not a weight.
Okay.
That's how it's described here on Wikipedia. It's a unit of force, not weight. That's why we can have, well, no, that's still meters.
I know. Foot pound makes a lot of sense, right? 1 pound applied at 1 foot away, perpendicular. So you have a meter with a Newton tied to the end of it. The fuck is a Newton?
It's one kilogram per meter. I guess you would say, like, if you're comparing it to foot pounds. It would be like one. I don't know.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. My pound doesn't accelerate. My pound's just fucking sitting there like an American. It's not moving. Why is my Newton doing extra fancy shit? I thought it was it's a weight over a distance. Is that not accurate?
We need someone who's
I'm gonna actually look it up because now I'm pissed off.
I think you just explained it to me. You just explained it as you said my Newton's not moving. Your foot isn't moving either. Your pound is moving in that. So
I'm
foot
aware,
pound?
1 pound, one yeah. foot away. So a yeah. weight, some distance away. A Newton meter is
I
would assume, something a meter away.
It's force a meter away.
It's like a kilogram of force one meter away.
I don't like it. I think this might be a scam.
I think that we need a physics teacher, like someone who teaches physics to, like, I don't know, freshmen in high school. We need that person.
Talk to me like I'm 5.
Talk to me like I'm 12 years old.
Right now, Troy is driving a Volvo and screaming at his radio.
Yeah, probably.
But in all seriousness, shit, I was going to say something.
That was a pretty strong tangent.
So, but going back, I believe that if you got your weight really close, all you would need is a calibrated scale to get that last little bit. And you know what every town has? A calibrated scale.
At the post office.
And it's at the post office. So, I think you could test your own torque wrenches.
But how would you adjust them if they were wrong? Like, that's...
You don't.
You hit them on the ground in the opposite direction.
Yeah, you just bang it on something, hit it with a hammer, and then test it again and see if it's closer. And if it's further away, you hit it on the other side with a hammer.
It has to be a titanium hammer. I don't make the rules. It's a Titan meter, and it has to be titanium to adjust it.
It's like that time that Matt and I were riding. It was in Denver, and he had I forget what bike it was, but it was a cyclocross bike with disc brakes and a quick release skewer. And okay. We went around like a roundabout in the bike path, and his brakes started to rub, and he kind of cursed at it. I'm like, well, just turn the other direction and make it stop rubbing. And I think he might have actually done that, and it worked, and he was really mad at me for that suggestion.
I don't understand how mountain bike QR is somewhat okay, but cross QR...
Well, it's not a thing anymore, but it was at first.
I mean, my chisel's still QR. It's just right upstairs on the trainer. Don't talk bad about it. We should talk about the next thing, though.
Yeah, we should.
And no one's going to care, but I think it's sick. The new Factor 1 road bike, it's...
Is that one of those microwave meals?
I do like how the Factor meal prep, whatever it is, like meal program, like their logo looks very similar to the Factor bike logo.
You mean it has the same six?
It's the same font, except I think the Factor bike is italicized slightly and the meal thing is not.
Well, yeah.
I judge all my neighbors who get Factor delivered to their door.
I've never eaten any of it and I probably never will.
I like judging people. It's a lot of fun. I'm like, look at this lazy fuck over here. Can't even make their own meal.
You know, Kenny, you eat chicken nuggets. You don't make your meals either. Go to the store. You go to Wendy's and they're like, sir, this is a Wendy's. And you're like, I know. Give me the fucking nuggets.
But I don't need another company to put them on a platter for me. I can handle that.
No, they literally put them in a little box for you and hand them right into your fucking Ridgeline window. In my mind, the passenger floorboard of your Ridgey is just full of chicken nugget boxes and sauce packets and ants.
I do want to say I do not eat nearly as many chicken nuggets as it might sound like.
I don't believe that. That's what someone eats
with like some tater tots.
No, that's what someone says when they secretly share, like they have a nightly ritual of sharing nuggets with a raccoon behind the dumpster at Wendy's.
I would totally do that.
Me too.
But no, this new road bike is hot for all the wrong reasons. It's hot because it's ugly, and it's ugly because it's actually aerodynamically better. And I'm into it because it doesn't have to look good if it works. And
well, yeah, and there's not a whole lot you can do to a road bike now to make it better. So if you come out with one that is kind of wonky looking and it's aerodynamic, like it's actually tested in a wind tunnel, which I've heard, yeah, like Factor actually does that. And yeah, I mean, it's cool that they can actually change road bikes a little bit and make them better because there's not a whole lot going on there. It's a pretty simple piece of equipment. Oh, and I have an equipment request, like some help from our listeners. And yeah, I could spend, I don't know, an hour Googling this, but I like to poll the listeners. I need a set of knee pads for trapping because a lot of times I'm either in an area, if I'm, you know, I don't know, trying to trap bobcats or foxes or something. Like I am in an area that has cactus, and if you kneel down on a cactus, it fucking ruins your day. And it might ruin like a few days later, because even if you think you got all the cactus spines out, they're still like embedded in your pants somewhere and like broken off where you can't see them, but then they stab you all the time while you're walking. I need knee pads because, and then also like if you're like what I just ran into, you're kneeling on ice, it's cold and it's wet. So I need some knee pads, but I need them to be not the slip-on style. I need like probably like some construction ones.
Just go on and say it. You want strap-ons.
I want some strap-on knee pads, and everything that's out there is fucking huge. Like they're either gigantic and plastic. I just need a little bit of padding, and I need them to fucking stay in place. And I've got some skinny-ass lower legs. So everything that's out there has a huge potential to just rotate around while I'm wearing them, and that just defeats the purpose. So, you know, I don't need, like, Matt's looking right now at, like, some Klein Tools heavy-duty hinged knee pads. I don't need that much protection. I just need to not get stabbed by cactus or get my knees wet on the ice or whatever. Like, I just need a little bit of padding, It's got to have Velcro straps. It can have two straps. That's fine. But it's got to be small enough that it actually works. Because the ones I have now, the straps are way too long. And I've tried like tying knots in them and shit. And like they're just shitty. And they move around and they just don't really work. So if anyone out there has a suggestion for lightweight strap-on knee pads, I need that fit small, skinny-ass calves. I need that. So if you have a suggestion.
I think I just found it.
I'm open to it. Because if you search like small knee pads or women's knee pads are just fucking regular ass knee pads with fucking pink trim on them. And I get really angry when I see that. So I just stop looking.
Well, women have different knees than men, right?
Yeah, their knees bend sideways. And I think that's where the vagina is.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. Got it. And if you put pink Nailed on it, then, you know, then it works better.
Yeah.
Apparently.
Yeah. If you put too much black. No, wait. No. Don't say that.
If they're not pink, they don't work.
If it doesn't have pink, the vagina and the knee get scared. So you got to have some pink, you know. But we should move on as quickly as possible because I almost said something that's not even appropriate for me. Let's see. God, I have so many tabs of trying to learn about goddamn Newton meters.
And by the way, Troy, if you're listening, anytime I use a torque wrench to check the torque on a SRAM brake nut, like the compression nut, I hear Troy in my head say Newton meters, because that's what he did during the SRAM, the technical...
Stew?
Yeah, during Stew.
You were almost there, the SRAM Technical University?
Yeah, at the SRAM Technical University classes, he said Newton meters, and I... Literally every time I use a torque wrench on a SRAM brake, I hear Troy's voice in my head saying Newton meters.
And we go to listener. Let's do that big listener question.
Yeah, we had
from last week
question.
And then shut this thing down because we've been going for a long
time. Yeah, almost 2 hours, actually.
It's been like 19 days. I've missed a whole like 2 weeks of work. It's stupid.
All right. This is from Full Face Ray Ray. Says, Matt, Ray here. I'm an OG who has no shit, heard every episode from y'all sitting around the table together in Memphis to today. You may remember I let you grind my wife's crank when you worked at Absolute back in the day. More on this later, haha.
So, to give the backstory, dude walks into the shop. He had his wife's bike. He had a Canfield crank on a Santa Cruz or a Giuliana of some flavor. I think it was green. And she had taken a little tumble and bent her crank. And I took it off and ground the back of the crank off until it didn't hit the frame any, like ample clearance for the frame so they could keep riding on their vacation.
All right. So anyway, I'm on the Usable Trails Roundtable in Denver. We are a group of trail builders, me, advocates, and adaptive trail users that are committed to building more adaptive trails. If you're interested, I know the fine folks at Craig Hospital who are creating adaptive bikes for folks of all kinds of circumstances, as well as the adaptive bike guru for our team, Topher, and I can introduce you to these peeps. Your technical knowledge would be a blessing for helping these folks find technical solutions to bike problems, and in return, they can help you with your adaptive customer. You may remember that you mentioned the use of axles for adaptive bikes in a past question of mine, so I connected the Craig folks to the SRAM folks, and voila, now they are finding even better solutions than 15-foot shifter cable runs. Also, I just got my first Trials Moto, an 18
gas,
and I'm completely addicted. I'm lucky enough to be able to ride on my property in Conifer, but maybe I'll meet up with you at an actual trial event in Howard. I also have an orange 300 that I ride a lot, but the Trials bike is my current love. Any suggestion for skills to practice in the garage besides static balance? Do you want to keep going or answer one?
Yeah, let's go back a little bit. Let's go back and do those two. I would love to get connected with those people because I think that would be a really fun thing to do. And kind of depending, I don't know. I'm just I obviously am not riding as much as I used to, but when I can help someone keep riding their bike, I'm still very excited by that. So definitely would love to make a connection and find some time to come up and share some knowledge and talk about what I've seen, what I know. Sorry, I'm trying to stretch a foot that keeps trying to cramp, and I keep touching Andrea, and it's freaking her out. She's got bugs in her skin.
He's like touching me in the hip with his toes.
Rubbing on my foot that keeps trying to cramp. Anyways, so yeah, that'd be a lot of fun, because there's even some really wild things that I haven't really mentioned that I know would work. We just have to figure out how to make them work. So then adding into that, if you live in Conifer and they're in Denver, maybe we ride trials bikes together one day up there on my way to go visit them and yada, yada, yada. As far as things you can practice in your garage, there's not really a lot that you're going to be able to do beyond static balance without actually riding the bike. Now, did he say you can ride on his property?
Yes.
Yes.
There's some other... So, I know another guy that can ride on his property. I haven't been there yet. He is in Golden-ish, just outside of Golden. So even riding on your property, there's some things that I can show you that are so stupid that make such a big difference. And when I say stupid, I mean stupidly simple. So, and the last thing I would say is you should come down and ride here at some point. The weather is usually much nicer here. So if you have a way to travel with your moto, not in the elements, you'd be able to ride here just about any time you could make it from there to here.
Yeah, the place where the trials is in Howard is like a really, really warm spot in the valley, and it gets a lot of sun. So even if it snowed like yesterday, it's usually like dry.
Yep,
real fast.
And if it
Did
was,
you say he was from Denver?
Yep.
Your Howard/Salida is nicer generally weather-wise than Denver?
On that side of the valley, both in Salida and at Turkey Rock, where like the trial stuff is. Yeah, like it's just like an oddly warm and dry spot, and it gets a ton of sun, and it melts off like immediately.
I can't
wrap my head around that.
Was there snow on the ground when you were here?
Up in the mountains, like when I was driving in, everyone was flying off the mountain. But then there was nothing in town at all.
Okay. But there can be snow at my house and dry dirt at Turkey Rock. So, okay.
Right now, our yard is half snow, half mud. And Turkey Rock is probably
dusty.
Getting like powdery.
Yeah.
I did ride at Turkey Rock though, right?
You did.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay.
Then let's see.
We want to move on to the...
I would say static balance, and then
you have like those little practice cone things that are good for practicing turns and whatnot.
Yeah, I have cones for turns. I mean, you can do it with Coke cans, but the cones for outdoors are really useful. They're extremely cheap. They're the little soccer cones, and then but in your garage, I'm assuming I'm taking that as a non-motor running. There's not really much else you're going to be able to tackle. If you're struggling with static balance, you lower your tire pressure and then you keep bumping your pressure up until you can do it at 15 PSI front and rear. That's the trick. I can't do it at 15 PSI, but I also don't have an indoor place that my head won't hit the ceiling. So, now let's move on to the question for my wife. Is 5'2". She rides an extra small Yeti ASR. She's fitted by Natalie, which is Pedal Fit Physio?
Pedal Fit PT.
Pedal Fit PT. For 155 cranks, but we can only find 5 dev boat anchors. We are scheduled to race 5 races and 10 start lines this summer, including Breck Epic. Are there any XC weight cranks coming out in many sizes of 155 or less? Hello, SRAM, pretty please. Race Face just released 160, but nothing smaller. Thing that I would say is SRAM does make a transmission 90 crank in 155. I don't think you're going to find anything really fancy from them. And I wouldn't count.
I mean, it's probably lighter than the 5 dev ones.
Well, it's definitely not going to break. So if I were in your boat, and this isn't I'm not crystal balling and saying like, oh, just wait, wink, wink. I don't know. But I would because I don't like fucking around with stuff that doesn't work. Canfield cranks that bent. I would buy the transmission 90 cranks in 155. Let's see. And I would, the two things I would do is, one, it would have you on the bike with the proper, her on the bike with the proper crank length in no time. But then also, number two, it would have, like, let's say that you did decide to go 5-dev, well, you can get a dub spindle, your current bottom bracket works, or if SRAM did ever release something in carbon, you could just slap it right in. Or it wouldn't even have to be carbon. It would probably be, if I had, I mean, XO is aluminum now, so I don't know if they'll ever do XX1 or even XO, but they do offer the transmission crank, which means they're thinking about it.
Well, let's think about it. So what's the latest crank to come out from SRAM? It's probably the Eagle 90, and it's in 155. So I guarantee that once whoever else, whatever lineup is due for a refresh, I guarantee we're going to see 155s in that. I'll just say that. I don't know. This is not any insider information. I'm just using logic. We all know that everyone's going shorter and shorter on cranks, and the fact that they're making them in Eagle 90, the newest crank to be released, I guarantee they're on the way. They just are.
And for those of you, the reason I knew this so offhand is I placed a set of those on order for a customer today. So I am going to give you not the SRAM part number because it's way too many letters. It is CK. Like Charlie Kangaroo, that's not the right alpha.
Like Chris King.
Or Chris King, 529, or the manufacturer's part number is 00.6118.700.004. And I'm sharing that because with our posting schedule, I would have already ordered cranks for my customer before you can order these. Looks like the main distributor that we search for things like this in, they have three available. And then we're going to go over here. You're going to see if someone else has more of them. I don't know that I've ever logged into this distributor on this computer. I can't tell you how many they have in stock, but BTI has them in stock as well. S, like girl, Sam, 55376.
There you go.
And that is a 155 millimeter chain line with a 32 tooth crank or chain ring for dub with an 8-bolt interface. Comes with chain ring guards. Booyah.
And he wraps it up by saying, I try to donate dollars when I can, but I'm much more able to help in other ways like this. Anyway, much love to you and Andrea and my fellow full face Kenny. Sincerely, full face Ray Ray. And he gives his phone number, which is, I'm just kidding,
303-67-5309.
You know what made me really mad the other day?
Everything.
I always use 867-5309 for any time there's a loyalty program at a store. By the way, I think I've given that advice. Just generally speaking, you do that. You roll into a Smith's or a King Supers or a gas station or whatever.
In, like, the local area code. Plus
yep.
that.
Yeah. They freaking disabled that at our freaking gas station down the road. They disabled that phone number. I used it for like 2 years, and they freaking turned it off. And I'm pretty pissed off about that. So I'm going to try to get it reinstated.
Which means also, like, if you did use some, I don't know, ubiquitous number like that, that a lot of people might use, if you go to a place that has, like, gas station rewards.
Oh, you always
get
them.
You can type that in, and, like, you might have, like, a bunch of fucking, like, rewards points.
I've gotten like 50 cents off a gallon at places. It's insane. It's like, you've got 8 million points. Fuck yeah.
All right. We should wrap it up. It's been forever.
All right. Shut it down.
Let me find patrons.
Hold your dick, Kenny.
Already am.
Thank you, new patron, Jake. He's a new $5 patron that just joined, I think, today. Thank you, Jake, for joining our Patreon. Our patrons at $10 a month or more are Kurt, Timothy, Taylor, Zwift, Skunk in Your Trap, Jim the Fucked Up Trike Guy, Burt Reynolds, Krusty Stash, Zozo, Eric, Burt Reynolds Mustache, Taper Bore Pro, My Pal Dal, MTB Shenanigans, Free Gabe Horn, Cam Irish 1, Zach, Tennessee Zach, Green Giant, AJ, Leland, Phil McCrevis, Ride Time Extended, JC, Gordon, Josh, Fart Noises, Tom's P, Ryan, Bill, Aaron, just another asshole on a bike, Ty, underscore, Noah, cool beans, Matt's church bell, Oliver, close off, Frank the tank, goat roper, Tom P, butt stuff, Tyler Durden, at $11.11 per month, the Epstein Island bike trails and pizza buffet, at $14 Australian, we've got Patamillan disco ball, Dean at $16.50 Australian, and at $20 a month, we've got Brian, Scott, Joe, I want a mustache ride from Burt Reynolds, Poop Wrench, and at $26.06 per month, Kenny's Daewoo towel, Harley at 30, What's Wrong with Andrea This Week at 31, and Six Pack Outdoors, We're Touched by the Tism, powered by Tylenol at 50.
Man, that Daewoo towel one is a very odd and specific reference.
Yeah, I don't remember that one.
I mean, I just don't know that I've ever said that on the show. It like kind of freaks me out. Maybe I did.
Never know. Our listeners are very special, and our patrons are even more special.
Yeah, maybe someone latched on to that comment from like 6 years ago or something and remembered it. I don't know. Or somebody I like really, somebody that I really know. I don't know. That's like a crazy one.
Yep. All right, everyone. That is another episode. You guys got anything else?
Nope. Shut it down.
All right, everyone. Thank you all for listening and good night.
Thanks for tuning in to the Just Riding Along show.
Shit coming out of your